The community and the researcher, you all welcome to this meeting. I would apologize for starting behind schedule. Today members are being split to other committees because there are committees that have to adopt their reports. So we all know that in this term we are running short of members, as like the other terms. So members are deployed to various committees. So in some states they have to go to other committees so that they are fit there. With your indulgence, I think our apologies accepted. Today we are supposed to continue with the consideration of their slippers. We are going to continue with the consideration of the sectional titles, the management bill. We were on page 4. Functions of the body corporate. Can you lead us? Good.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to Honorable Members. We are now at clause 3. The functions of bodies corporate. 3.1. A body corporate must perform the functions entrusted to it by or under this Act or the rules, and such functions include A. To establish for administrative expenses a fund sufficient in the opinion of the body corporate, Roman 1, for the repairs, upkeep, control, management, and administration of the common property.
He was trying to remind us where we stop at. I'm tired, yeah, but it's fine. Carry on.
Okay.
We are on the right track.
Two, for the payment of rent and taxes and other local authority charges for the supply of electricity, gas, water, fuel and sanitary or other services to the building or land.
Can we correct something? Uh,
Local authority.
No. Babu A, to repair and upkeep. Why can't you say maintain?
Okay. Yes.
Maintenance.
Yes.
Yeah. Why can't you change it to maintenance?
To maintain.
Yeah.
Okay.
To control the work already.
Okay.
Quick learn and honorable Bula.
Okay, Chairperson, the same sentence. Why do we need commas there? For the repair, upkeeping, control, there is commas there, other than and control management. Thank you, sir.
We do have an end, honorable member, because the function of the must, let's say, the sufficient funds in the opinion of the body corporate to repair, to maintain, regulate, management and administration. There's the end there. Honorable Bula, are you satisfied, honorable member?
Yes.
Okay.
No, Chair, thanks. Chair, I'm taking note of your concern about maintenance. But I just wanted, on a point of clarity, when you refer to body corporate, is there any specific area of maintenance and any specific area of upkeep? I want to understand that there are not limitations in terms of maintenance, certain prerogatives.
All the common property has to be maintained by the body corporate. There is no distinction between types of common property. If it's common property, the primary legal obligation to maintain, as is set out in this bill, is clearly on the body corporate. There may be instances in which there's a recoupment obligation, but don't worry about that. It is always, there's no part of the common property that is excluded from the body corporate's obligation to maintain.
Can I make a follow-up? I raise this concern because there are certain problems in society when you're on oversight. There is this perception that the body corp is only responsible for certain maintenance and not perhaps maybe, let me give you an example, maybe areas inside the house but the areas just outside. I just want clarity on that.
Let me, Chair, there is a strict distinction between sections and common property, which is ascertainable by reference to the sectional plan. Every single sectional title scheme has a sectional plan that will tell you exactly where the common property starts and stops, where the sections start and stop. As a matter of generality, you can say that within a dwelling, that will always be a section. Okay.
I just want this repair and upkeep. I thought it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. Okay, I'm happy.
And understanding. And you have to understand us, our background. We're not new to this thing. They are new. We cannot say that it's new to the consumers only, even to us. This is a new market to us. So you have to assist us there. So what is the difference between repair and upkeep? Can you clarify that?
It's the same, yeah. Repair is if something is broken. The lift is broken. You must repair it. Upkeep is if there is wear and tear and you've got to keep it in the same condition. Yeah, upkeep and maintenance. Yeah, repair and maintenance. Maintenance and upkeep is the same.
To be followed by Honorable Fitlani and Honorable Senior, welcome. So, Sakala, no, we're at the beginning.
Chair, on control, I thought that we say it should be a regulate, not a, a control.
Yes, what is going to happen when this deal, when we are, is we are going to complete the consideration clause by clause today? So they are going to send us something that is another document that has already been refined, so that before we deliberate as the portfolio committee, all these changes have been made. Honourable Fickler.
Okay, Chairperson, good number two. For the payment of rates and taxes and other local authority charges, we've got so many ends there. Is there no way we can delete one of them and say rates, comma, taxes, and other authority charges? Thank you.
There is logic in what seems to be that unusual use of grammar. That extra and serves to pull rates and taxes into one category, those being the charges you're likely to get from a local authority. So what this, the English here is basically saying, you've got rates and taxes, and then you've got the other things. So there is, whilst it may seem a little bit clumsy, there is a logic behind it.
Let's talk about this now, this clause. Let's talk about this clause. For the payment of rates. Oh, Mr. Stillman, I'm sorry. Can I hear you first?
Yeah, it happens to be on this clause as well. I'm just wondering that, well, first of all, a very easy one. We earlier on Wednesday, I think, decided to replace local authority with municipality. And then for the payment of rates and taxes, currently rates and taxes are paid by the individual owner. Here we're talking about the body corporate. So it shouldn't be...
Sorry, I'm inviting the contribution to this one.
Yes, the rights and taxes under the Municipal Rights Act is now paid individually by each owner. So I think that should be deleted from this one.
If I may ask.
Yes.
We are saying here the body corporate are the owners. Am I right what I said? The body corporate constitutes owners.
Madam Chair, can I just explain something? You're quite right that the body corporate is an association which is made up, its members are the owners of units in the scheme. But the body corporate, it might own a section in some schemes, but that is not a necessary thing. A body corporate does not own the common property, as it does in some other jurisdictions. The type of ownership is that you own your section plus you own an undivided share in the common property. Therefore, the body corporate, whilst it is made up, its membership is the owners of the various units. It does not necessarily, it usually doesn't, own anything at all in terms of fixed property. Whilst it is possible for the body corporate, for example, to buy a section to put a supervisor in or something like that, and that does sometimes happen, then the body corporate just becomes another member from that perspective. But if the body corporate is not the owner of the common property.
Honorable Lagoute, Honorable Ketas, Honorable...
Chairperson, thank you. While still there, I have a problem with this maintenance and control part of it. As a member of a body corporate, you own a unit. If I decide maybe to make some mega renovation in my unit, doesn't it that the body corporate will have to approve that before I do something? Is that not a part of control? I need a clarity on that one, Chairperson. Thank you.
I think they have to answer that one because it's the first one, because mine is on number two. Chair, I'm checking for the payment of rates and taxes and other local municipalities.
Is it necessary for the other local municipality?
Say thank you, Chair. I just wanted to comment on your question and the answer as it relates to this particular clause here. I assume when we refer to owners, we refer to them in this act as in their individual capacity. And when we refer to the body corporators, then refer to them as a unit. And that is why where currently the owners individually are responsible for rates and taxes, this one in this particular instance should come out because it refers to the body corporate as a unit. But I think we need to make provision should there be changes in the future. And perhaps we are addressing it here because it does say or other but it says or other services.
Saying there's no future. We are dealing with the legislation.
No, but Chair, what I'm saying is if the municipality, for example, after next year's election decide that they're gonna put the rates and taxes back into the body corporate, then it means this will be incorrect if we delete it for the body corporate. So we need to make provision for any changes that the municipality may make where they decide they will collect it. So I'm suggesting something in the order of, or any other, you know, municipal-related charges that they make, something in that order.
Madam Chair, that suggestion is very sensible. SALGA, in its submissions, suggested that there was the possibility that they might, in some instances, want to come to deals with bodies corporate, that the body corporate would, in fact, collect the rates and taxes as an agent for the municipality. So leaving this, as the Honourable Steiner's suggestion has suggested, would give them the possibility to do that. But in dealing with the other questions, the other charges, a body corporate will always, for the foreseeable future, have to pay service charges, the water supply, electricity. It is the body corporate that will pay for the removal of garbage. It will be the body corporate that pays the cost of sewage removal. So there will always be, you can't measure each toilet and that, and there never will be a situation where you can do individual billing for all municipal services. It's not practical or possible. So the body corporate will always need this. This particular provision, this and other local authority charges, will always be necessary. Insofar as the question about inside repairs, there is a fundamental distinction between the body corporate's obligation to repair all the common property, which is normally outside the living areas, and the owner's obligation to repair within. But there is an overlap because if an owner, as you suggested, if an owner wants to make changes and those changes require, for example, planning permission, then the body corporate has the obligation. It is the body corporate who have to sign the plans off and that sort of thing. So there is a degree of control and a degree of administration. The word control, I know we are replacing, but just insofar as we use it ordinarily, the body corporate is designed not to get in and do the maintenance inside, but to make sure that the owner, for example, doesn't remove a load-bearing wall or something like that. There is an oversight by the body corporate within the sections, even though the body corporate is not responsible primarily in law to fix them.
Okay, I think the point is covered. It is the matter between the owner and the body corporate. There seems to be a conflict of interest. But I think in terms of other charges, you have qualified that so that we don't open up a can of worms, you know, for people who want to see that there is a loophole there and then start maladministration.
Are we in agreement that we leave it as it is? Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. 3BQ for the payment of any insurance premiums relating to the building or land. For the discharge of any duty or fulfillment of any other obligation of the body corporate.
Okay.
Now, after the land, there is end, and then you're starting another sentence. for the discharge of any duty of fulfillment.
Well, that's right. Is that right? That's how drafting is done. Okay. B.
Okay, we're still continuing with the functions. This is the fund. I wanted to check if this fund, they cannot determine the percentage for maintenance. Because there has to be a sale. In fact, I was just thinking of two separate accounts, but I said no, it would be better if there's only one account, one fund. But there is a certain percentage that is determined for maintenance. So that ring fenced, let me say a ring fence, they must, the ring fencing of a certain percentage. Because if that is not happening, they might not be considered. I don't know.
Chairperson, can I respond to that? The idea of having, when you look at this, the wording that is used here, it talks about a single fund which would include both your operational expenses and also your provisions for future maintenance and repairs. That is, it is seen as a bit of a weakness, and a suggestion has been made, which will come through the Chief State Law Advisor, by Professor Corny Fanamova, that there should be a specification of two funds. Firstly, an operational fund, a fund, and the wording has been worked out, where you have an operational fund into which you put the funds that you're going to need for this particular financial year that you're budgeting for, and then a reserve fund. The idea of putting a particular percentage, as you suggested, to the operational fund doesn't make sense, but it makes enormous sense when you start talking about the reserve fund, because then you start building up on an accrual basis the costs of repairing that lift or that tarmac atom surface or whatever it is. So there will be a specific suggestion made in regard to this clause that it should cater for those two different things, and it's within that context that you could, I would suggest most sensibly by way of regulation, say what percentage there must be for various things.
Can we get that information now so that when you include it, we must all be aware of it?
Okay. I think sometimes if you are not an Englishman, it gives you a disadvantage. You see, what on bullet 3, when it says, for the payment of any insurance premium related to the building or land, and then you say, and for discharge, or either we can delete the last this, and then you say, and for the discharge, should be a one sentence. Because if you say, land, and comma, and then say, and,
It is correct, because you are saying la end is for the last word, because you are saying end for the discharge of any duty or fulfillment of any other obligation to the body corporate. No, I think it's correct. No. Okay, let's agree. Let's delete it. Come on, Mr. Sanganda. Okay, and that. No, let's leave it.
So, okay. In legal writing, what it means is those functions are a composite. Clearly speaking, you could have end in every subsection of that. And for purposes of legal writing, you will put the end at the set subparagraph, because it fulfills a particular function. In other legislation, you see that it's or. That does not mean that you should put the or with the last sentence.
So in actual fact, you could have had end in every, in the last of every sub paragraph here. So it is important.
Coming from the office, I just got it now from the department, and then I would suggest that the committee should deliberate on it before we can insert in the proposed amendment. This must be circulated because it seeks to replace the current paragraph A and B that we're having in front of us under the function, the one that we're discussing now. So I would say it must be circulated and then the committee deliberate on it. Just flag this one. And then by the time, where's the Sydney? Oh, you can assist us. By the time, let's flag this one, and then we'll come back to it. Carry on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are now at B. It says that, to require the owners, whenever necessary, to make contributions to such fund for the purposes of satisfying any claims against the body corporate, provided that the body corporate must require the owners of sections entitled to the right to the exclusive use of a part or parts of the common property, whether or not such right is registered or conferred by rules, to make such additional contribution to the fund as is estimated necessary to defray the cost of rates and taxes, insurance and maintenance in respect of any such parts or parts, including the provision of electricity and water, unless in terms of the rules the owners concerned are responsible for such costs.
I'm happy as it is because I was going to suggest that the cost of rates and taxes be deleted, but the end of that sentence I think covers that once again, whether it's the owner's responsibility or the body corporate, because it does say in terms of the rules the owners concerned are responsible for such costs. So where the owners are responsible for those costs it's covered, and where the body corporate would be responsible it's equally covered. So I'm happy with that entire paragraph.
Let's pass this. Let's skip this. And then we, because it means the functions of the board corporate are going to give us a lot of headache for now. So I would suggest that this issue of funds, of this established funds will give us a problem for now. Let's look at D. What does this say? OC. Okay. OC is not related to that issue of the fund. Okay. Can we hear?
Thank you, Chair. C, to require from a developer of who is entitled to extend the scheme in terms of a right reserved in Section 25(1) of the Sectional Titles Act, to make such a reasonable additional contribution to the fund as may be necessary to defray the cost of rates and taxes, insurance and maintenance of the part or parts of the common property affected by the reservation, including a contribution for the provisions of electricity and water and other expenses and costs in respect of and attributable to the relevant part or part.
Based on what the Honourable Toza said and based on what you said in terms of this fund that you're referring to and a paragraph that's been formulated, most of these clauses in this one will have a link to the fund. So perhaps we must leave the entire Section 3 for later, with your permission. But there's just one thing that I want to raise here, which is not linked to the fund. And that is in F, we refer to other financial institutions. And I'm just wondering whether we will need a definition for that. And I'm thinking, for example, the bill that wasn't, if it was part of the post office, where the post office is going to become a bank, for example. Mm-hmm. I think the financial institutions need to be defined. The definition for that, they
And NHFC is a financial institution. Does it not? What is NHFC?
The financial institutions have to conform to certain minimum regulations. So, to be classified as a financial institution. And that's why I'm just suggesting that perhaps we define
it. I think we can tie us on that one, because let's just leave it as it is, because we are raising something else, a post bank. We are going to have something, a problem here. Let's not bring something as enough. Let's leave this one as it is. Honorable Kula?
Now, Chair, I just wanted to check, by using the terminology registered bank, does that confide to accounting practices?
There isn't a direct correspondence between the two. The registered banks are certain deposit-receiving institutions, and there are a limited number of registered banks, and that is the type of thing. Yes, in essence, this is where can the body corporate put its money. It can put its money in registered banks. It can put its money in financial institutions, and that, I believe, does have an ordinary meaning, but Honourable Sam disagrees with me, in essence, we're talking about where can the body corporate run its account, simple like that.
Chairperson, I see we jump to F. We didn't do D yet, but I wanted to suggest something there. On D, can we put, because it say A and B, can we say A, B, and C to conclude all these other sentences? Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm still on the issue of registered bank. Considering the fact that this is a body corporate fund, so do they have to go to any other bank, or must they consider the bank charges, because the banks are not the same and the charges are not the same? Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm not certain why the provision of any other financial institution. So it's a choice. I think it is a choice. But let's read this. Let's read this. Can you read it please for us?
Madam Chair, if I may, this in fact touches upon the suggestion made by Honourable Stain that there should be, and by you, that there should be a particular percentage. This follows on such functions include, at the beginning of 3.1. Let me just take you through the whole thing. A body corporate must perform the functions entrusted to it by or under this Act or the rules, and such functions include. Then A would be to establish an administrative fund which is reasonably sufficient to cover the estimated annual operating costs, and that would then continue 1, 2, 3, and 4 for the repair, for the payment, all those things that are existing there. You understand? And then B would continue to maintain a reserve fund which is reasonably sufficient to cover the cost of future maintenance and repair of the common property. One of the most common criticisms of sectional title is that people do not create reserve funds at all. And this would provide, if you approve it, a statutory obligation to maintain a reserve fund in a reasonable amount.
I was having a concern on that one, although if you can have a, but I think the percentage will be considered. Good regulation.
Yes, I agree with the last comment you made because I wanted to say there should be some sort of minimum which should be dictated by somebody, whether it's the ombudsman in the rules or whether it's in the regulations. But now, will this come in as clause B, 3B, and C, the current B becomes C? Is that thing? Okay. Yeah. I was also a little bit uncomfortable with the word reasonably sufficient. Reasonably according to whom that was, but hopefully that will be covered.
Can I cover that right now?
Yes.
One of the most difficult things is that the current legislation says reasonable in the opinion of the body corporate. And I, with my Scottish ancestors, would probably only put very little in that reserve account, whereas you might, with some other ancestors, put more in that reserve account. And when the difficulty is if you refer simply to reasonable, and then you allow the possibility that the minister might prescribe percentages, you then covered, because if you go to the ombud or if you go to a court, where they're going to decide what is reasonable. Whereas when you say reasonable in your opinion, you're now, it becomes an objective test, sorry, a subjective test. Yeah.
I think I obviously question reasonable because it was just explained, it's what's reasonable for you is
but
may not be reasonable
to be
for me.
A regulation
that's the addition here that will cover the reasonable.
Okay. But I think this clause, we must insert this clause, the regulation, you must set out a minimum percentage. Can you, they must?
Chair, just a word of caution though, if we're going to leave it up to the minister, what is reasonable to the minister is also not going to be reasonable, could not be reasonable for a lot of other, the minister pardon? Yeah. There should be the minimum should be related somehow to perhaps the value of the complex, so that it differs from complex to complex, where a complex may be worth 30 million and another one may be worth 300 million. You will obviously need different values for maintenance.
Let's put it this way, Mr. Steele, because those regulations, before they get to a final approval, they will come before the committee. Let's leave it on. But I think it is important for us to, so that we are reminded, that clause must be inserted there, so that we don't forget. And then when it comes to, we are going to think about it. Meanwhile, because we are there to advise the minister. Even we have got that capacity as the portfolio committee. So we will advise the minister with regulations. Honourable Bother.
I'm inclined to say that the body corporate, I know you're saying you must reserve that, but should actually be responsible for determining what is reasonable. I'll say why. In your building, you may not need a lot of money because the building is new, maintenance is low. For the next 10 years or 5 to 10 years, that the maintenance of that building is less than an older building. Well, you might say that building, in fact, although its value may be less than the newer building, in terms of maintenance, the cost of maintaining that building is much higher than the new building, which is much more expensive than it. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Honourable Britta, you are, but please bear in mind that not all developers build perfect buildings, and some of the most horrendous maintenance costs can happen in the first 3 years of a new development. The idea that you can decide where you want that decision to be made, but if you simply say that it's in the opinion of the body corporate, that's not going to protect consumers. That it should be flexible, definitely. That it should be perhaps in the rules or the regulations. If you're worried about the minister, put it in the rules. There are various ways you can do it. But don't make assumptions, please, that maintenance will be low at the beginning. It's not always the case.
And I hope you have not forgotten to define the developer, because we requested that you define the developer.
Not now.
Yeah. But I think here we are talking about the minimum that. We are referring to the minimum. So they can decide. They can have a maximum.
Yeah.
We are referring to the minimum. At least the minimum must be regulated. Honorable
Chair, I'm just looking at the point that has been raised earlier on, reasonable. And then I also picked up what you are saying. But the response in view of the value that has been raised, these are problems out there in the community as well. Now, we want to make this, not comfortable with the terminology reasonable, because it also leaves an area of loophole, Chairperson. You know, as explained, alluded to by Honorable Stein, there are different values. And what you find is, what I'm concerned about is that if we don't specify some sort of, in terms of the cost of the building and the maintenance, there is this exploitation out there where people are not in a position then to pay the exorbitant amounts, and then they land themselves into problems. And what happens? They end up losing the flats because of costs that have accumulated. And 50% of the community might say, in terms of the section, right, we can afford this 500 rand a month, whilst the other... So that reasonable is a bit open, Chairperson. We need to get the value or something towards that. It's a bit open. I'm just like...
We have the same opinion, but what we have agreed upon is that on that clause, they must add that depending to irregulations that are prescribed, I mean a minimum percentage that has been determined by the minister through irregulations, but they are going to formulate that nicely. So I think we are covered, because the moment wants to say that the person will look at the regulations, even the ombudsperson will look at the regulations. What are the regulations say? Because we cannot put everything here in the legislation. Are you covered now? As long as that clause has been inserted, that when they are saying it is reasonable, but let's look at the regulations. What are the regulations saying to this matter? I don't know.
I hear that, and I'm quite happy with the regulations. The only challenge I have is you still have to determine the value. Whether you go to the regulations or to the in the bill, you still have to say, how do you arrive at that minimum threshold? Because if you're going to arrive at the minimum threshold through the value of the property, you're going back to my argument. The values of properties are going to be determined by... Exactly. How is the minister sitting in Pretoria going to decide what is the minimum threshold for properties in Port Elizabeth or in Durban? How do you compare? Because there's market-related issues that determine the values of property.
The minimum means that at least those that have got lesser value, they also benefit. But what is important here, if we are setting up a minimum threshold, the body corporate still has the right to have reserves that are more than what has been determined by the minister. But I don't know. Can you come up with a problem now? Come up with a solution, Representative.
No, sir, I don't know the answer, but I talk from experience here. People, this money is going to come from the tenants at the end of the day. When you set up unrealistic minimum thresholds, you will tax people who live, or levy, people who live in conditions that are less favorable, higher than people, because you are basing your threshold on the higher values of property. Okay, I'll leave it, but
what requires to be done here? The department and the consultants check the least, the minimum value in the market, and then that would be the minimum threshold. It will start there, and then it can go up. I don't know.
I understand. I am myself an owner of various sectional titles. So I understand the problem that Member Botha has raised. However, the solution, as I've earlier suggested, and I think it's a solution, we can't expect the minister or anybody else to go out all across the country and value property. And that's why I've suggested that it must be a percentage of whatever value. Now, each body corporate as to whether they get the valuator out or whatever in terms of their insurance and so on, they have to value the property. So if it's fixed as a minimum percentage, then whether, like I say, it's 300 million or 30 million, it's a percentage of that and it will vary accordingly. And that would be the minimum, as you've said. If that body corporate feels they want to go above that, then it's their duty. The advantage of this, as I see it, is that when they are levied initially, it may hurt their pocket, but they soon reach that reserve, and provided there's no major maintenance, in the future years, particularly the immediate future years, they won't need to increase the levies, because they will have that reserve until they start dipping into it for maintenance.
Can I offer a solution? I think after Mr. Faye.
No, because the minister, all buildings are valued by the municipality for purposes of rates and taxes. So you can actually use that as a starting point. Although that is not a perfect record because people have applied for, but the body corporate at some point arrives at a value. So you can, even for insurance. So you can actually use that. All I was looking for is a starting point. So I think the municipal valuation might be a good starting point to say a percentage of the value of that building based on evaluation done by the
a minimum percentage. But again, state law advice, can you...
I wanted to just clarify one thing. This reserve fund will be established for the purposes of the maintenance of the common property, and not for the maintenance of the buildings of the units and sections of owners. It's basically for the maintenance of the common property, which is the lifts, the steps, and so on, the grounds. So I just wanted to clarify. Is it not so? Okay.
Sorry, I think
that lady was presenting here. There's quite a lot of the problem of maintenance because there are restrictions even on the maintenance that is conducted by the owner, because you are only allowed to maintain the internal. So,
Honourable Chair, you're exactly right. Your distinction between the section and the common property goes through the median line of your exterior walls, your ceiling and your floor, which means that all the foundations, the exterior of every single building, even though it may look like a separate unit, it's not. It's got common property all around it. All the roofs are common property. Mm-hmm. So it's not just your driveways and that sort of thing. It's actually an integral part of the building fabric. The Canadians call it the building envelope. the thing that is, that covers your section is all common property, so it is a substantial amount. It's not just for the roads and stuff.
Percentage, because Ganjan is the Indian market, and the percentage.
Chairman, could we give some input on this percentage thing? You're either going to allow each individual scheme to agree their own, in which case you're going to, as has been suggested, say it's reasonable, and the end point of that decision, which you haven't made, is that every single body corporate has an obligation to put a reasonable amount away. If anybody's unhappy, they've got to, they can't get their co-owners to agree, they've got to go to the ombuds office and say they're not. So in essence, somebody, anyone who has the authority can decide what is reasonable. That is a laissez-faire attitude. You may not like it. If you prefer to prescribe the idea, the insurance value, as opposed to the municipal value, is likely to be very much more reliable, because people's self-interest is considered when they decide how much they can insure for. The municipality then can be completely arbitrary in a mass appraisal system. So what you might do, for example, is say that the minister will prescribe a percentage, and that percentage might be, for example, of the insured value of the buildings. That is the sort of thing that you might have in mind.
What I'm thinking about is this: if we leave it to the body corporate, there has to be a person who is playing oversight to this body corporate. How are we going to play an oversight if there is no stipulated percentage? When we just leave it to the business.
Chair, I think we find ourselves in a predicament here. And you are absolutely correct. These are the problems that we speak to on the ground. About 2 weeks ago, I was in a community in Cato Manor. And we hear that the court had issued an order for a body corporate to stop selling people's homes because of unreasonable exorbitant. Now, I think what we are speaking to come up with a solution to that. But we find ourselves in a predicament simply because it is very difficult for us to establish and determine what budget will be required for a budget year to operate this. So perhaps maybe we have to deal with what has been suggested earlier on, the municipal value of the municipal local authority. And if the value of that property, basically, Chair, you've got to cut your suit according to your club. This is what we are trying to say. If there's a municipal value, say, for R1 million, you cannot be under the pretext of raising costs equivalent to another building that is valued, say, about 3-4 million. There got to be consistency.
Chairperson, can't it be a percentage of the assessed insured value of the property? And one other thing, can't the owners maybe tell the trustees in their annual general meeting what percentage will suit them?
Chair, I'm afraid we're creating a problem where we've already articulated the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I think to cover, we need to give some sort of sense of ownership to the owners. And that's where, again, where you said if they want to raise more, they can raise more. So I take the point where we say sort of the reasonably sufficient. If we just put in somewhere, as long as it is not less than whatever percentage is covered in the regulations. So, and it's to the insured value, every annual report or their financial report, they make provision for insurance based on a specific insured value. Now, if that's the value that body corporate is going to accept to insure against replacement, then that's the value they could use for a percentage for the maintenance thereof. So as long as it's not below a certain percentage, for example, to cover people that you don't want to unnecessarily burden them with the levies. So, but where people, where there are more affluent people and they want to go beyond that percentage, that is where they go beyond that. But in order to cover people like the lady we had here the other day, there's that minimum percentage. That is the absolute minimum that they must allow for.
and the regulations then specify that. So it covers both sides. It covers the people where the owner doesn't have an interest, but according to the regulation, they'll have a minimum, and it covers those people that want some fancy stuff so they can allow for more.
But here at the same time, let's continue now. We are all in agreement that we are going to leave it as it is, and then we insert an additional that relates to a minimum percentage that has got to be prescribed in the regulations. That's all. And then that's where you're going to expand in the regulations. That's it. Then can you read this, continue this into these notes that you have put, Mr. Singh?
Okay, when you say leave it as it is, you're talking about this one, not as it is there currently. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, let's continue.
Okay, you've dealt with those things.
I'm on the bill.
Okay. Thank you, sir. We are now at the D. E. To E, to raise the amount. Yes, sir. To raise the amount for determined by levying contributions on the owners in proportion of the quotas of their respective sections. F, to open and operate an account with any registered bank or other financial institution. Thank you. G, to insure the building or buildings and keep it or then insured to the replacement value thereof against fire and such other risks as may be prescribed. Thank you, sir. H, to insure against such other risks as the owners may be known by special resolution determined. Yes. Subject to section 16 and the other rights of the holder of any special mortgage bond for which to apply any insurance money received by it in respect of damage to the building, in rebuilding and reinstating the building or buildings insofar as this may be effected.
I just want to check whether this one was an error or whether the presenter is reading a different instead of any special mortgage bond. And I would say sectional.
Section 16.
Yeah, but he said special. So I wanted to know if he had a different version or not.
No, sectional. My apologies, sir.
I just want to check, maybe I'm reading wrong, because if you look, somebody's bugging me. If you look at GNH, I think they sing the same song. I'm not sure why. It's not. Is it different? Okay.
Fundamentally different.
Section 16, Chair, is destructions of or damage to buildings.
In the process, when a building is being destroyed, you don't necessarily take the insurance proceeds and rebuild the building. That's why you need the cross-reference.
Thank you, Chair. Is there to pay the premiums on any insurance policy affected by it? To maintain all the common property and to keep it in a state of good and serviceable repair? To comply with any notice or order by any competent authority requiring any repairs to or work in respect of the relevant land or building? To comply with any reasonable request for the names and addresses of the persons who are trustees of the body corporate in terms of the rules or who are members of the body corporate?
Whom do you refer to the competent authority?
The concept of a competent authority in law is anyone, any authority that has the right to ask you for that information. It doesn't need definition. That is simply a legal concept.
It may be. Can't you make an example? Just put an example. For instance, the inspectors, or I don't know.
Mr. Singh? Chair, you recall I previously asked for some sort of definition here, because based on the explanation now, I want to ask a question. If I was, or let's take the example of that lady that's an owner in that, would she be a competent authority?
She as an owner is entitled to that information, not under this clause, but under the prescribed rules. No, she would not be a good example of a competent authority. The chief, the ombud would be, or an adjudicator would be an example. SARS would be an example. The municipality would be an example. So any authority that exists and is entitled to that information by law would be entitled. That's the competent authority. They're acting within their competence. That's really what the phrase means from a legal perspective.
Fine, so that I think definition it will be fine. It will be okay, because you will make an example. Another person,
like a person, if we can say the when we talk about competent authority, like inspectors from the health department or the environmental affairs. Okay, thank you.
I think we need to make an example sometimes. I don't know where to put them. As Mr. Stein is saying, any other, we are dealing with lay persons. We are not dealing with legal people here. These legislations are not meant for people who are legal. Though this is legislation, but we must make it so to be easy, simple, to be understood by the other people. It's not wise to always refer to the legal terms. Legal terms are not going to assist here, because our people are not all legal literacy. So let's try and make it simple. I don't know how we're going to put it, but you can try it, I know.
Can I suggest, rather than a definition for a phrase that appears only once in the entire Act, if you wanted to make that more simple, if, for example, you changed the wording with Bongiwa's assistance and said something like any authority that has the competence in law to require the information, if you wanted to make it really simple, you might do that.
So that it can be simple terms.
Not in the
Carry on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And to notify the Chief Ombud, the local authority concerned, and the Register of and the Register of its domicilium sitandi, which is its address for service of any process. Yes. Or to ensure compliance with any law relating to the common property or to any improvement of land comprised in the common property. To maintain any plant, machinery, fixtures and fittings used in connection with the common property and sections, and to keep them in a state of good and serviceable repair. Agreed. To subject to the rights of the local authority concerned to maintain and repair, including renewal where reasonably necessary, pipes, wires, cables, and ducts existing on the land and capable of being used in connection with the enjoyment of more than one section or of the common property or in favor of one section over the common property. On the written request of any owner or registered mortgagee of a section to produce to such owner or mortgagee or any person authorized in writing by such owner or mortgagee the insurance policy effected by the body corporate and the receipt for the land for the, and the receipt for the last premium in respect thereof. And in general, to control, manage, administer the common property for the benefit of all owners.
I just wanted to ask, many buildings or in some areas, the body corporates leave buildings in a state of disrepair and spoil the aesthetics of the area and actually devalue properties. Now, is there no way that we can insert somewhere regularly? I don't know how we can say this in such a way that you actually force the body corporates after every so many years to actually do something about the facelifting of the buildings. I'm saying this, if you look at Greenpoint here and Molly Point, used to be a squalor many years ago until the municipality took a decision to force owners to build, to paint buildings and make, and the place changed overnight. And I'm saying, I mean, I know this in many parts of the country, this is a problem. And I'm just saying, is there no way that through this management we can actually introduce an element of regularity to the maintenance of the building, or frequency.
The way in which this legislation is drafted, it places an absolutely clear and unambiguous obligation on the body corporate to maintain and repair all the common property all the time. So you can't go further than saying you must do it. It would take something else. For example, in the Singapore situation, they have a building commissioner who goes and checks that the buildings aren't exactly the sort of thing that you're talking about, like the council is doing. And the council does have certain powers, but I suggest that you can't put anything into this legislation which will have the effect of actually making somebody this is about how you do it. But if people fail to do this, then it's going to be some other authority. And certainly the Chief Ombuds Office is not designed for that particularly at all. It's designed to provide good governance. As far as I'm aware, and Professor Van Merwe will know better than I do, I don't think there's any way we can achieve what you've suggested.
I think let us be practical. Our experience, even to those townhouses we are renting, we do have challenges there.
Mm.
So let us be practical here. I think Honorable Potter is right.
Mm.
The buildings, there must be a regulation that at least after a certain period, maybe 2 years or 3 years minimum, there has to be something that is happening. We don't know, or 5 years, but there has to be done that is, because we are trying to regulate here. And we are trying to release people that are having problems. People, they just ignore. They will ignore. We know people. We know our own people. How do they behave in some things? Mm-hmm. And it's not good for people to fight all the time for your rights. You have to fight. Things must be regulated. They must be clear, because it can say no.
Mm-hmm.
This is not regulated.
Can I Honourable Chair, that's exactly why we want a reserve fund, you know, for future, you know, upkeep of the building, and painting it and things like that.
We agree there is a fund. They can keep that fund forever. They can keep this fund forever. There are people who enjoy. There are people who enjoy to see money just lying there, not being utilized.
Yeah, but then they can go to the ombud, and the ombud will
force them to. Every time you run to the ombud, can you stand? No. This is unfair. That is unfair. No, that is unfair. That will be. Just regulate this thing. Go and construct something that is going to be put here, inserted here. You will see how to put it. All of you, your legal advisors there. Go and insert something that is going to satisfy our own people, not a certain section of the people. No, because here, people can take advantage. Those people, they can take an advantage of other people. So let's make sure that, for instance, the issue of those people have got many votes. They've got bigger voices. They can suppress other people. So no, let's make sure that this legislation, it covers each and every person. Mr. Steng.
Okay, I must admit I don't quite agree with you here. We can't regulate for every single action by the owners or by people. There are some things we need to leave to their discretion. And I do believe we've closed that sort of loophole by regulating that there should be a fund for that. Now, I would imagine that because they are all individual owners, somebody like that lady that we had would then say, but, you know, we need maintenance. The money is there because we've now regulated that it must be there, and therefore it will take place. For us to try and regulate that within a certain period, we're facing exactly the same problem that was raised earlier by Member Bertha, in terms of the different values. When one complex does maintenance, they may use a very good paint, for example, that will last 10 years. Another one may use something where they'll have to paint in a year or 2 years' time again. So it's not going to be reasonable to regulate for everybody that every 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years they must do certain minimum maintenance. I think we've gone as far as we can in terms of saying that the money must be available. So, you know, owners will say, but, you know, there is money. Our place is not looking very good. And therefore, they'll ask that maintenance be done. It then cannot be refused because the money is there. And as a last resort, that owner then goes to the ombudsman. But the money is there. So, and that's where we've, I believe, been proactive in protecting their interests.
As a chair.
Okay.
Yeah, Chair, I think you need to look at this from different perspectives. And I want to agree with you, unfortunately, that there are some people, managing agents, that turn this thing into lucrative business. They are opportunistic, and you're absolutely correct. They use the number game to advance the hidden agenda. But I raised sometimes back, Chair, the importance of knowledge. So therefore, it is absolutely imperative when a body corporate is constituted, there must be people of particular competence. Now, in view of what the chairperson is saying, and in view of the competence, what can be used to ensure, for example, that there is a person that is serving on the body corporate with sound accounting knowledge? Is there anything that we can include in the Act to ensure that they're confined to certain expertise?
There is a provision in the
Advisory Council exists to assist the Minister insofar as this is concerned. What Honourable Bulla is referring to fits much better under the Community Scheme Ombuds Service. That's the one designed to educate and that thing. But at the end of the day, this is a tenure of the people, and the people who own don't all have accounting degrees. And so yes, the state will undertake the obligation to give them for free certain information, and that's what the Community Scheme Ombuds Service is all about. You can't put that into this particular legislation, but hold that thought. It's very important for the other one.
I'm giving you a food of thought about this one. No, I mean, you have not convinced me. Unfortunately, I'm not convinced. We'll see when you come back next time. But I think you can formulate something here. I trust you can do that. Let's carry on, Mr. Steyn.
I'm covered with honorable brother. The thing is now, it seems that if now we're giving everything to this ombudsman, then they must consult the ombudsman. It is everything they must consult the ombudsman. Well, what for? We were here to make laws here.
Sorry, can I raise a point of clarity, Chair? Chair, I hear what the response. There is a distinction between the body corporate and the trustees. I'm making reference to those that are serving as trustees to have competence, skills.
We don't have trustees.
Yeah.
We're going to put your input there.
Thank you, Chair. Number two, it says liability for contributions levied under any provisions of subsection 1, save for special contributions contemplated by subsection 4, accrues from the passing of a resolution to that effect by the trustees of the body corporate and may be recovered by the body corporate by action in any court, including any magistrate court, of competent jurisdiction from the persons who were owners of units at the time when such resolution was passed, provided that upon the changes of ownership of a unit, the successor entitled becomes liable for the prorata payment of such contributions from the date of change of such ownership. Number three.
Perhaps that we've just heard that not everybody understands what the difference of trustees and body corporate. So I'm just wondering, should we then not have a definition of trustees of the body corporate?
I meant additional definitions at the end of our meeting. I don't know whether you captured them all, because the trustee is one of the definitions I suggested. Okay.
There's a small sentence here. Provided that upon the change of ownership of unit, the successor in the unit entitled becomes liable for the prorata payment of such a collection from the date of change of such ownership. If somebody who was not aware of some liability, then when did they change the ownership? What would we say there?
It is vital that somebody who takes transfer of a unit becomes obliged to the same thing that the person who owned it before was liable for. Otherwise, who is going to pay the body corporate? This provision has been put in relatively recently to address a particular problem, and all it says is that if I buy the unit from you and there is a levy of 1,000 rand a month, due for the whole year, that, and I take transfer in June, I become liable automatically for July and August and September. So we're just creating a continuous ribbon of liability for and cater for the fact that budgeting is an annual process, whereas changes of ownership can happen at any time. So this thing doesn't hurt anybody. It protects the body corporate so that its claim for levies accruing month by month from a seller is then exercisable by against the buyer.
I wanted to assist there in that, in answering this question, because I think when you sell a sectional title, the transferring attorneys would also inquire from the municipality in terms of your levies, your rates and taxes are in arrears and so forth. So in this case, once the act is passed, they would also inquire from the body corporate if there are any outstanding payments due. And then they would, those would be defrayed from.
You mean that it's not going to affect the new buyer? The buyer.
The new buyer would know from the body corporate. In fact, when from the transferring attorney,
that all of those outstanding debts have been paid. There would, there's no way you would escape, especially when if there's the law in place, because the transferring attorneys would also have to take account of this act.
Okay, provided that upon the change of ownership of a unit, the successor entitled becomes liable for the pro rata payment of such contribution from the date of change of such ownership. Can you explain that?
I also want to be of some assistance if I can. I think it covers, as Tosa said, both, it covers the new owner, but it also covers the body corporate. It covers the new owner in that you won't be liable for arrear levies. The pro rata means from the time that you take ownership, you are then liable only from that period forward.
Yeah.
So, and it also covers the body corporate in that you can't now say it was agreed by the seller for the special levy and you therefore don't want to pay it. So it actually covers both the body corporate and you, so that you don't pay my arrear levies. You're only responsible from the date of ownership. And that is the pro rata portion.
And to add on what Honorable Stein was saying, I think you cannot enter into a sale agreement without a legal representative to explain everything to you so that you can understand what you are getting yourself into. And that advice will tell you not to accept this and to accept this. I think that is clear.
Chair, actually, I've got a very simple explanation about the pro rata. It's like if I buy the house today, and today is the 15th, and no, I'm just making an example. Today is the 15th, and I'm supposed to pay 1,000 rands, and I take ownership on the 16th. So the previous owner will pay the 5,000 rands up to the 15th, and then I'll take over from there. I think it's... Thank you. I think there is a sabotage, Chairperson. Every time I talk, something is happening. And...
Yeah, Chair, I think it's about the knowledge industry, because previously you had a company by the name of KPMG that provided all the knowledge. It's about informing the people in the body corporate. But, Chair, I want to raise a question of clarity in terms of the pro rata. And if the pro rata, let's say the area amount, cannot be collected onto... Yes, from the previous. If it cannot be collected, will it have any legal binding on the new tenant?
No.
information that may help us going forward. I'm perhaps in the advantageous position in that I've read the other bill as well, and particularly to cover Member Bula. In the other bill, there's very specific mention made of education of body corporates by that by the Ombudsman and the Board of Service. They call it the Board of the Board of Service. So in terms of the education that he mentions, which is important going forward, there is provision there that part of their responsibilities will be to educate body corporates.
Ombud Service will provide education. Why are they not creating not from the fund training for themselves, the trustees? Fund has to provide training for themselves, not the body corporate. I mean, not the, I don't want to talk about the Ombud Service now. I want to talk about this one. Why can't they utilize the same funding to provide training for themselves?
The short answer to that one is that if you're in a body corporate, you are very careful how you spend your money because it's your money. And they and whilst you might say we will force them to spend money on education and this sort of thing, with the greatest of respect, that is going to be one provision that they spend a lot of time avoiding. That's my view.
If now, that means now the Ombudsman is going to also the training. Who's going to do?
The Board of Service. We'll get to this bill when we the
other one. There's a Board of Service. Who's going to pay the Board of Service?
It's the other bill. We'll get to that.
I think we must, as I've indicated previously, I'm in the unfortunate position that I'm also a trustee, in fact, on one of the properties. But let me just point out, Chair, that the trustees can, for example, change every year because the body corporate elects the trustees at the AGM. So, you know, to put a provision in there, ultimately we have to give some responsibility to the various owners because, and I believe when it's people's own money, as has been said, they're going to be a little bit more careful with it. So it's up to the owners as a body to also choose competent people. And I think in terms of the concern about people that have proxies and that can then take charge of an AGM, I think that is addressed in here as well, where the proxies that the person may hold is being limited. Because I've had experience where developers get proxies and then they just take control of an AGM. So that concern is addressed in here in another clause, where they are limited to their proxies. But I think we need to be careful that we don't over-regulate. We need to leave some discretion to the owners.
No, this is a problem, Mr. Sting. When you are referring to an owner like yourself, who is well-informed about this? We're talking about people who are not well-informed. Who is responsible for training? Somebody must be responsible. Let's forget about the person who is another legislation. We are dealing with sectional titles. Who have to organize that? If the trustees, what is the role of the trustees? I ask the question, what will be the role and responsibility of the trustees? They are changed now and again. It does not matter. But the legislation is there stating their role and they are responsible. Once they are being nominated as trustees, all of us here, we are owning flats. Now we are electing good professor, no quiz, no professor, no give. No, they are our trustees. Let's give them the role and the responsibility. or we give the role and the responsibility to the managing agent. I don't know. But let's not talk about something, because we're talking about the sectional title. A person must be responsible from this section, because the ombudsperson is there to solve disputes. If I do understand properly.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are out of time. Chairperson, I think if the body corporate appoints trustees, they are putting their trust on them. I think the trustees must be the one who must appoint a competent person, service provider, yes, to provide training for everyone. Each and every year, whether they change the trustees or not, but that must be the function of the trustees. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, Chair, I don't know. I'm raising issues, and it's coming back to the very same thing. I mean, yes, and then every time the issue is raised, I am said, no, it's dealt with a certain piece of legislation. Chair, it is about addressing the injustices and inequalities of the past. That is what precisely we must do. And then, let me take an example. If you appoint trustees, communities must be vigilant to appoint competent people. I have raised that earlier on, and I was said it's going to be dealt with in the knowledge in the ombuds. Now, I also raised the very same issue, I think, the other day, about sectional titles and poor people ultimately need to engage courts. I was said no, that there is a definition between the sectional title and the ombuds. But the latter part of the meeting concluded that yes, ultimately, people will have to engage courts. Now, what we are saying is if you have the correct, competent skills serving on the sectional title and the trustees, it will alleviate some of these problems.
When Utata Nalidi takes, I am saying, let's forget about ombudsman now. We are dealing with this one. Let's make sure that something is inserted. Yes, as we are saying, I think what we can say here is to ensure that in appointing the trustees, they must ensure that they appoint competent. That is one of their role or function or what, I don't know what can you call it. Because, so that when we get to the trustees, we see what will be their role. And then we put their role there. Mr. Kiss.
Madam Chair, I think what has been raised here brought us down on the ombuds. And I understand you say we shouldn't make reference to that. But I think the core question has been whether the body corporate should have or should utilize the fund for training. And if in this house we agree that the fund should include also provision for training, therefore the ombuds comes to the fore, because the ombuds will also be charging for services rendered. Therefore, any provision for training will then require that such funding should include whether the services of the ombuds or any other competent, because the body corporate will have a choice whether they will use the ombuds or any other competent person.
Chair, I don't know, Chair. I propose that we have to continue, because if we check now, we are discussing the function of what the copyright and all that and classes of format. So now, if we can continue with this document, sometimes we can finish it as early as 2 o'clock.
Not a matter of finishing. We can finish it next year, because this is for the people. This is very much important, because what we are saying, the fund, that was my opinion, that the fund should also provide training, because our people, they don't understand. This is a new market. I know the person that I'm getting out of that group. So, Zamut, it is very much important. As Zazis, we don't know these things. Even amongst ourselves, we must be honest. So, we need training, even us as members of parliament. After this bill, we need training about this upmarket, new upmarket that is coming up. Really. So, let us be honest. So, we are saying these owners, even the owners themselves, they have to be trained. In South Africa, they have to do less skills development. Quite true. So, they have to be trained. So, we are asking to this legislation, under this legislation, where are we going to get funding? Because, as Mr. Mkira is saying, even that, if it is a body corporate, they will access services, whether from a competent service provider or the ombudsman, they will choose. So if we are saying it is provided, we are forcing them, we are pinning them to the ombudsman service. So freedom, of choice. It's limited, but who is supposed to fund? Who is supposed? Or the department? Which one my department?
Thank you, Chair. I think on the issue of Mr. Honorable Stolle here of time, that it doesn't matter, even if we can come back in our fourth term, in our fourth quarter, Chairperson. We have this maybe 3 days workshop. I think this will be much helpful, because we are here not representing ourselves. So we need to understand this very clearly. We are representing people on the ground who know nothing. There are people who have money, but they know nothing about, they are not educated, just like myself. So they know nothing about this. So we need to understand it so that we can be able to explain these little things. And this act must be simplified, like you said, Chairperson, so that it will be easy for anyone to read it without anyone interpreting it. So, Chairperson, what I want to support here is what you are saying, that this maintenance fund must provide for that training, because there is no way. The department cannot provide for that training, but the maintenance fund must provide for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair Person. If you go to clause 6, that is a clause that is dealing with the trustees of the body's corporate, and it also stipulates its functions. If you look in subsection 1 thereof, you know, the functions and powers of the body's corporate, the one that we're dealing with now, they will be performed and exercised by these trustees. So what I want to get in is, I want to clarify from you, for what purpose are we going to train the owners if the functions will be performed by the trustees? And the second part I wanted to raise maybe was to specify, you know, in the appointment of the trustees, that the appropriately qualified person will be appointed to deal with these functions.
and not just anybody. And if that is the case, then we won't necessarily need to train the trustees as well, because they will be appropriately qualified to deal with this function.
No, I don't think you understood me properly. I was saying there has to be a person who has to be trained. You remember I made an example of the trustees, that we get competent people so that they can be able to provide the information to the body corporates, the owners. But at the same time, the owners, they do require a training. Whether it's an induction or whatever, some sort of training, basic training, so that all these issues that are there of the common, they should understand the common property. What is the meaning of the common property? What are, who's responsible? Those things that are very much important. These little things. Those little things. And they have to be reminded each and every time. That training is important. Even not in Siyabizwa kwamasipala wethu kwezomasiko. Sanwenza ngathi nje ukuthi asenziwe izinto. Nathi siziratepayers. We do have our workshops by our municipalities. So that is what I'm saying. These trustees, but the issue is the funding. So, because I was saying, we can add the function, role of the trustees to ensure that training is provided, but of some sort. Even the financial statements, the finances, people should understand what is going on. Because those levies are collected from them. It's not enough to just give a financial report, but they have to some sort of basic training on the finances. But you'll find that they have an understanding. Let's not take these things as simple. They're not simple.
Listen, I was thinking while you were talking. I think if training can be given to the trustees, then they will, in return, to minimize expenses, train the owner.
Honorable Stein had his hand up.
I agree with the sentiments expressed by everybody here. But I think what we must not forget, and particularly the point that Honorable Bula continuously bring up, ultimately we want the poorest of the poor to benefit. Now, all these things that we are adding, we've now put a minimum reserve in terms of maintenance, which I believe is absolutely necessary. But in terms of the situation as it currently is, it means that already levies across the board will increase. There is an increase in levies for the ombudsman, which I don't totally agree with. That's where it should be paid for. Now we're talking about things like training and other things. That is all ultimately going to come back to that individual owner, the poorest of the poor, where those levies are going to become unaffordable. So we need to, on the one hand, we need to try and find a balance here. We need to, on the one hand, balance that all the things we want, which are all good, but ultimately is going to put a burden on that homeowner that they may not be able to afford. So perhaps, and it's just a suggestion, I heard the minister say today's Friday, it was Wednesday, in answer to your question, Honorable Chair, mentioned in his reply about the estate agents, some piece of legislation also going to come to human settlements now. And it is the majority of these sectional title units are sold by estate agents. And perhaps, I'm just saying, throwing this out, perhaps that is somewhere where we need to look at the training thing, because the estate agents get what I believe is a too big a commission for doing very little work. But there may be an opportunity where one can make it obligatory for estate agents, when they sell his unit to me, to educate me about that. I'm just throwing it out there, and I'm just saying caution about what we want in this bill, because you're going to make it unaffordable for me to pay my levies as well.
I can ask, are there no any government
service providers that can provide free training. I just want to check that. This thing is a private sector thing.
We're trying to say that when people go for, I know with the subsidized housing, we're saying that they must receive, before they get their key, they must receive some sort of education in terms of responsibilities. So I mean, there's room here for the financial institutions that's going to fund or provide the mortgage. And like I said previously, there's room there for that estate agent that is going to get a commission on it anyway. To when they're selling a unit to me, that there must be some basic education in terms of the selling. For example, with that special levy, they must make the buyer aware that there's a special levy that's been added on 6 months before. But there are other avenues that we can explore. All I'm saying is we must just be careful that we don't make this now with everything that the good intentions, where we now the levies become so much that people can't afford the levy. They can afford to buy the unit, but they can't afford the levy. With respect, I don't, because there's very little that the trustees do, and within any complex, the people are so diverse that inevitably you've got an accountant, inevitably you've got a counselor or somebody, so you've got a big mix of experience there, and because every person is interested in their own,
I don't have
in your complex, find me a unit and I'll come buy it. Sure, but you know, because each person is an owner, they've got a vested interest. And so far I've seen, and therefore I'm involved, not because I've got the time or anything else, but I don't want to see other people squander my money. So the owners generally try and elect the people that they believe they've got the experience. But if you look at what trustees do at the end of the day, I don't see really what, because they employ auditors, for example. They employ them to do the accounts. So nobody from the trustees necessarily has to have that. Well, that body corporate can give that instruction.
Work it out. There must be some board who has got to be responsible. Both auditors, he normally comes to us and give us training. For those auditors, must make sure those auditors are appointed.
I'm confused. I wanted to comment earlier, but Mr. Stein has confused me even more. The proposal here was that, I think it came, that in the Ombuds Scheme Services, there's provision for training, which means monies will be levied from some source, and that money will either come... Which source? Yes, I'm coming to that, you see. At the end of the day, and in fact, let me step back and say, many of these blocks that we're talking about, and especially when we talk about the poorest of the poor, you'll find that many of those people are actually renting these units. They are not the owners. Their owner will be Mr. Stein, myself, and somebody else. The levy, whether you call it training levy or what, the fund is going to be built out of funds levied from the tenant at the end of the day. Because the owner is not going to take out of his pocket and put into the fund. He's going to levy the tenant. Now, already, I don't know if we're in the same group chair, in Cosmos City, we saw the large number of units, flats, that had been built. They were saying less than 30% of them are occupied. Reason? People can't afford them. Currently. Rent is high. Obviously, you build that rent, all the levies, all the maintenance costs, and what is here, what is here. So already, if with this fund, that's why I was concerned at the beginning about this creation of these two funds. Where the source of income comes from. Because some of these, you may say that the developer will contribute, some of these buildings, the older buildings, There's no developer there. The developer left long ago. In a new block, you might say so. But in an older block, there is no developer. These are owned by different owners. So who is going to contribute? The body corporate levies. I mean, I've got an experience where a body corporate asked us to pay a special levy, 6,000 or 10,000. And they want to buy the cheapest thing they can ever get. Within 2 years, the building was falling apart. All the repairs that were supposed to have been done, and we paid so much into this. So you are going to, and you are not there as landlords, as owners of the flat. The reason for buying properties, yes, I'm sitting here indeed, because I bought those flats for investment. And I bought them so that they can pay themselves. And many of the blocks here in Cape Town, they are not the owners who are staying there. It's tenants. So all this burden, all that it does, it's actually increasing your rental at the end of the day. So this is the balance that you've got to look at. That the more money you put onto this thing, on all these funds, you're actually increasing the burden on the ultimate user of that facility.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I think the issues that are raised...
Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issues that are raised by the honorable members, you know, they do, you know, make sense, you know, to a limited extent. But notwithstanding, you know, your previous position with regards to us not referring them, you know, to the chief ombuds, I think the issue that relates to say that if you provide training will also, you know, have, you know, an instance where you do, of course, you know, go back, you know, to the users themselves in the sense that, you know, they will be forced, you know, to pay extra, you know, from their levies and so forth. But however, notwithstanding that, if I can refer, let me say, to the ombuds, one of the functions of the service, Honorable Chair, if I can refer you to 4.1, it says that in performing its function, the service may promote good governance of community schemes. One, to provide education, information, documentations to owners, occupiers, executive committees, and other persons and entities who have their rights and obligations in the schemes, regarding their rights and obligations. So that will be one of the key functions that will be performed.
Can you refer that to this? It can adhere to this training. Well, I don't know. Well, go to insert it. It can be inserted here that the training that has to be provided. I don't know, you are going to work.
Yes.
I'm telling you.
Yes, we can.
Work it out.
We can cross
it. Because these people, we need them to get training from this legislation. It must reflect. I don't know where I'm going to put it. I'm giving you homework. That's all. I'm closing this now. Training. Even if the ombudsperson is going to provide that service, it must not be from this, because we are dealing with the sectional title. We are dealing with the people who are here. I'm following another general. That is a generalization. That one.
Yes, I want to assist. I was also going to refer to that clause, and in fact I was reading it. It talks about both owners and occupiers, which covers the concern we had, and I think you're right, if they cross, because in other sections, clauses here, we refer to that bill. So if they cross-reference the education to this clause, then it will take care of it.
We'll do that, Chef.
Yeah.
Right, three. Any special contribution becomes due on the passing of a resolution in this regard by the trustees of the body corporate
levying such contributions and may be recovered by the body corporate by actions in any competent court, including any magistrate court having jurisdiction, from the persons who were owners of units at the time when such a resolution was passed.
Chairperson, why is it to be a court to intervene first? Why not the yes? Because court will charge money which is not there. Thank you, Chair.
That is a very good question, and it has been raised by a number of people. The original intent when we were asked to design the community scheme ombuds service was not to that it should assist owners in collecting arrear levies. But that has been raised, and it's been raised in the comments which you chaps have read. It's been raised in a number of instances, and therefore it is up to you today to decide whether or not you want the community scheme ombuds service also to deal with debt collections. There is absolutely no doubt that the period of time and the costs associated with debt collection in the ordinary civil courts, this can't be done in the small claims court, it can only be done in the magistrates court or the high court, and those costs are very high. So the possibility this is something that can be done relatively easily, if you want this to be something that can be done, I would suggest that you don't make it only that court, that you give the body corporate the choice as to how they're going to do it. But this is not a new suggestion. This is something that has come up more or less since the beginning of the thing.
Ombuds must be the first choice.
The ombuds would certainly be the cheapest choice.
Yes.
Madam Chair, may I just mention just a small question of technicality? When we dealt with the previous one, you will see that there's a proviso at the end, provided that on the change of ownership. That should apply in the same way to special contributions, in the same way that it does to the general contributions dealt with in 2, in the same way as you understood that somebody coming into the scheme must take over liability for the monthly contributions, in the same way they must take over liability for any special levies that are running.
What do I say? We are trying to run away from engaging the services, the court services, prior the intervention by the ombuds. Even on that paragraph you are referring to, you have to work it out that at least it must be the ombuds person first. And then
Chair, I am fully content with that clause.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members, my apologies. Number 4 is special contribution. For the purposes of this section, means any contribution levied under subsection 1, other than contributions which arise from the approval of estimate of income and expenditure at an annual general meeting of a body corporate, determined to be a contribution to be levied upon the owners during the ensuing financial year. Agreed. 5.
If I might, it's something that the professor and I figured out last night. Ensuing means next year. It doesn't mean the current year. That word ensuing is a mistake, and it should be the current financial year.
Thank you, Chair. Number 5, the body corporate must, on application by an owner or mortgagee of a unit or any person authorized by such owner or mortgagee, certified in writing, A, the amount determined as a contribution of that owner, B, the manner in which such contribution is payable, and the extent to which such contribution has been paid by
we say the body corporate must, and it's really here where it comes in. On application by an owner or mortgagee of a unit or any person authorized by such owner or mortgagee, what we're inferring here is only when that application is done do they provide this. Should we not take that out so we say the body corporate must certify in writing the amount determined? So are we then suggesting that if nobody applies for it, then they don't have to do it?
Honourable Stan, this 5 is more or less a dead letter in the actual sectional title practice. It is seldom, if ever, that people will go to the body corporate and ask for this information. Why exactly that is, I'm not sure, but it's something that simply doesn't happen. It does, you're quite right, say that this is the owner saying, how much do I owe? Or the bondholder saying, how much does the person owe?
But you do the other way around. So I'm trying to say your advice is very imperative. There's no need to wait for a person to write. We are regulating now.
Again, it goes to the education side. If people don't know they must ask for it, they won't. So I'm trying to say take that out and make it compulsory for them to give it to them.
No, it's covered in the last point that Honourable Stan had raised. Covered.
Thank you, Chair. Noted. Yes. Six. The body corporate is for the purposes of effecting any insurance under subsection 1G, considered to have an insurable interest for the replacement value of the building, and must, for the purposes of effecting any other insurance under that subsection, be considered to have an insurable interest in the subject matter of such insurance.
Let me start, Chairperson, because I'm taking you back. Sorry about that. The body corporate must certify in writing. How often must it be? How often must it be? Thank you, Chair.
It is an excellent question. Is it annually you want? Is it quarterly? Is it half yearly? How often do you want this to happen?
If I may suggest, Honourable Chairperson, for you,
yes.
Yeah, I think if it can be annually after the general meeting. Thank you, Chair.
It sometimes for special reasons may change before the annual general meeting, so perhaps. Annually, or when a change is affected to it, when the levy for whatever reason changes, one would want them to give it in writing.
Chair, I was going to raise the financial. Yes, fine.
We were on the next clause. I must admit, even to me, it sounds a little bit public. So if I could just have an explanation of that entire clause there, please. Just explain.
It's very simple. The body corporate is not, in South Africa, the owner of the common property, nor of the sections. And therefore, in order to give them an insurable interest, this is a statutory provision which gives them the status in law to insure something that they don't actually own. In order to get cover from an insurance company, you need, in South African law, to have what is known as an insurable interest. That means that you have to have some real risk of your own associated with that property. I can't go and insure your car with an insurance company, because if it gets burnt, I don't suffer any loss. So if I want to take out insurance, the contract of insurance, the risk bet that you make with a financial institution, which is known as insurance, if I want to do that, I've got to establish an insurable interest. In this particular case, we have this rather unusual, or not unusual, this is the situation where the body corporate must make sure and preserve the common property and the sections, but it is not the owner of the common property and the sections. So you have to say that they have an insurable interest. You have to say that they have the right in law to be party to a contract, this bet about whether something's going to happen to it or not. And this gives you the basis upon which you can enter into such a contract.
I understand now, but like I say, it's still legalese language. What it says is, as the presenter indicated to you, I've got no interest in law in your vehicle, so I cannot go to an insurance company and insure your car. And therefore, this paragraph gives the body corporate, almost identifies them as because they now the guardians of the property. They're saying that because they're really the guardians on behalf of all of them, they have that legal interest to insure it on behalf of everybody. That's how I understand it, and it makes sense there.
Madam Chairperson, maybe one can add at the end, although they are not the owners of the land and the building. No? Okay.
I think it makes total sense, because I know in KZN currently there is a dispute and discrepancy about the market-related value, and they're utilizing...